The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Welcome back. End of another work week, and I hope things are going all right. Everywhere I look, I wish I could point to something positive. I'm beginning to sound kind of dirty, like I need a shower. So much negativity out there, it's really not pleasant. But it is what it is. And unfortunately, I see ever-Trumpers out there absolutely refusing to pay attention to what Donald Trump is doing in terms of funding everything that the Israelis ask for, even without asking. I think he's giving them things. It's that crazy. You simply can't separate yourself as Americans from what Trump and Netanyahu are doing in Gaza. Why not? Because we're paying for it. It's really no different than the Polish slaughter of Germans in 1939, in Poland, which was part of Germany, given to Poland after the First World War. And they began to slaughter ethnic Germans living in Poland. That led to the invasion of Poland by Germany and the beginning of World War II. And the Poles, quite frankly, are acting rather similarly now in asking to be given nuclear weapons. No joke. No joke. So in the meantime, if you're a Trump fan, how do you deal with that morally, that we're paying, day before yesterday, another 450 thereabout Palestinian men, women, and children, mostly women and children, destroyed with our money, our weapons? How do you deal with that morally? I don't know how you can explain it away without feeling dirty. I mean, it's just not pleasant. Anyhow, we have some interesting material this first hour. Wyatt Peterson is back with us tonight. Hello, Wyatt. Thank you for being here as always.
Hey, good evening, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. How do the Trump people look at this and support their man and say what a great president he is when he is clearly involved in fighting Russia? It's a proxy war. He is funding Ukraine right now. He cut it off for 10 days, but I think that was just basically to give the air a little chance to clear from all the smoke and debris. And they started it right up again. And the Russians know who they're fighting here. They're fighting Donald Trump now. They were fighting Joe Biden. Now they're fighting Donald Trump. I don't know how else to see it. What's your take on this?
Well, I agree, Jeff, and that's what makes it really ludicrous when he tries making these pronouncements like he's going to bring Russia to the negotiating table and get them to make a deal, a peace deal, because we're co-belligerents in that fiasco. You know, we're not some neutral party that can just bring him to the negotiating table and work out a deal. Like, we are funding his adversary. So this this is sort of delusional on Trump's part.
You know, keep in mind, everyone, we are not just giving the Ukrainians weapons and munitions. We're giving them advanced intel from spy satellites. They know what the Russians are doing. We're ratting Russia out, and yet on the other side of the coin, we're asking Russia to join us in peace. It is so absurd, the whole thing. It's sickening, just disgusting. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, and you see the same thing with Iran right now. Apparently, Trump issued an ultimatum to the Ayatollah for a new nuclear deal, and we know now that his ultimatum stated that if a new deal isn't agreed upon in 2 months, America will bomb Iran. And you got to ask yourself, why would Iran negotiate with the U.S.? I mean, we killed Soleimani. The first Trump administration, tore up the JCPOA, the nuclear agreement that we had, and Trump did that on the say-so of three rich Jews, Paul Singer, Bernard Marcus, and Sheldon Adelson, who swaggered into the White House and demanded that he tear up the JCPOA. So, you know, and we're currently engaged in bombing the Houthis. We're blaming Iran for it. Trump's threatening Iran, saying that if their attacks on shipping in the Red Sea continue, he's going to consider it an act of, you know, he's going to consider Iran responsible for it. Why the hell would they want to negotiate with us? Like,
I agree. Why?
Like,
there's no reason.
No, the Trump administration has lost touch with reality, whether it's the Ukraine fiasco or this burgeoning conflagration in the Middle East. They're totally out of touch. And what we need now is diplomatic, you know, articulate statesmanship. And what we have instead is this bellicose, belligerent oaf in office. And it's a very perilous time in history to have a guy like Donald Trump in any position of power.
80% of the buildings in Gaza are rubble now, all paid for by American tax dollars or whatever. It's coming from this country, okay? Think about it, 80% of the buildings. And what was one of the first things that the Jewish military went after in Gaza? They went after government buildings, in other words, all government agencies, schools, hospitals. And then they started leveling apartment buildings, dwellings. One of the biggest massacres I've ever seen. In fact, probably the biggest massacre I've seen, period. I'm not saying more people haven't died in other terrible things, but this is just disgusting.
What about the gas chambers in World War II, Jeff? I mean, 6 million people went up the chimney at Auschwitz.
All the known gas chambers that are there, which is zero, and all the known crematories, which we know about because the Germans kept complete records, and that's how they had to deal with a lot of the people who died in the camps from typhus, from starvation, etc., etc. It would take 75 years to burn 6 million bodies in Germany, allegedly, 6 million bodies. 75 years with the gas with the crematories that they had allegedly being fed by the gas chambers. 75 years! With the crematories that the Germans built. The whole thing is absurd.
It is. You know, it's just a brief aside. Dr. Charles Larson, he conducted autopsies on 2,000 bodies at Dachau, and he said he didn't see any evidence of hydrogen cyanide poisoning in any of them. And, of course, you have the chimney to nowhere at Auschwitz, so the whole thing is preposterous. But I thought you made a really good point in your monologue about American responsibility for this situation in the Middle East. And one of the things I hear quite often is Americans that are adopting this attitude of indifference now. They're saying, like, well, this isn't our problem. Just let them kill each other. The Israelis, I don't support any of them. Let the Israelis and the Arabs kill each other. And it's like, well, that's all fine, well, and good, but we're supporting Israel. And, you know, we're supporting them financially, we're supporting them militarily, we're supporting them spiritually with all these evangelical nut jobs we have over here. The ceasefire, phase one, allowed the Trump administration to send $12 billion in military aid over to them so they could rearm. And now Israel's reinvaded Rafah. They've taken the Netzarim corridor. 200 children were killed in the last 3 days alone, and this is blood that is on our hands, Jeff. Like, it's at the point where you, at what point are you ashamed to be an American?
I ask Trump supporters to think about these things. They don't want to hear it. They, honest to God, don't. They think the guy is a true blue American patriot. He is a Zionist yes man. That's all he is. He does what they ask. He does what they instruct without blinking an eye. It comes right out. I think he, frankly, did probably convert in 2017. And there's probably a good chance that that's true. Mm-hmm. Not that it matters, because his subservience to their rule is complete. I don't see where he's arguing about doing anything. He's not. He's just saying, okay, how much and where? What do you want?
Yeah, and it's amazing what happens to these people when they attain positions of power, whether it's RFK Jr., who scuttled his life's work essentially by promoting the MMR vaccine because of this piddly little measles outbreak. Mm-hmm. And then he's saying anti-Semitism is a public health crisis. He's totally destroyed
his mental illness. Basically, the inference there, it's you're mentally ill if you disagree with what the state of Israel is doing to other human beings.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how many have died in Gaza. A couple hundred thousand at least. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Lancet, the British medical journal, prestigious British medical journal, they estimated, I think, what was it, 200,000, and that was months ago that they came out with that report. Right. And that
I think it's 3 to 5, but whatever. Mm-hmm. We don't know.
Yeah.
We'll never know for sure.
No, it's preposterous to believe these official numbers, though. But then look at another sad character like Tulsi Gabbard, who gets into a position of power, and she's now supporting the bombing of Yemen, and which she previously opposed, and now she's calling on other nations to back up this bombing campaign. They shot down the appointment of, Dan Davis, who, you know, was going to be brought into the...
He would have been reasonable, wouldn't he, I think?
Yeah, but he, again, he wasn't sufficiently pro-Israel. He is a Christian, and he stands on Christian principles, and he thinks that our... fatal attraction to the Zionist state is leading us down the path to perdition, and he believes that the genocide in Gaza is just that. It is a genocide, so he had to go. He was no good, and I know Colonel McGregor was pretty nonplussed about that, because he's known Davis apparently since the early 90s and the Gulf War, and he vouches for his character and his integrity as a man. But that's the reality of the situation. If you're not in line, if you're not in step with the Zionist operation, then you're not going to make the cut. And if you are out of step and you get brought into the fold, you're gonna get your marching orders very soon.
No, it's true. It's very true. McGregor, well, I asked him several times to come on the program, but because of my outrage at what was going on in Gaza, back then he felt it was too hot to handle. Now he's coming around. He's fully on board, but... you know, he's all over the place. There's no reason to have him on the program now. We can get his videos anywhere. And he's saying the right things. It just took a while. I admire people who actually change their positions in light of the truth. When the truth finally gets to them and they change their position, that's very encouraging to me. A lot of people won't. They won't change under any circumstance. They're ever Trumpers, ever and ever.
Yeah, there's an intransigence on the MAGA right. And look at right now, like, the Trump administration is investigating 60 U.S. universities, right? And Trump ran his campaign on being this free speech candidate, this crusader for free speech. And they're locking up people that are not sufficiently pro-Israel, like Mahmoud Khalil. They sent him down to...
How many universities? How many?
60 universities they've opened investigations into. And I know that Columbia has expelled or suspended, I think it's something like 22 students due to pressure from the administration.
That's true.
And so the administration is applying maximum pressure to these universities. Mm-hmm. And you ask yourself, where was this during the BLM protests? Trump was in office. Right. There was none of this, you know? So this shows that the true ruling power is pressuring the Trump administration to crack down on these people that are American, if not citizens, residents, in the case of Khalil, a resident who married an American citizen. She's 8 months pregnant. They shipped him down to Louisiana and are holding him in a jail cell for nothing other than organizing some protests against genocide. They're not even claiming to charge him.
He hasn't even been formally charged yet. They're just holding him under some executive order thing from the White House, that kind, or at least that mentality. The White House doesn't like it, so you go to jail.
Wow. Right. Right. And did you see today, Jeff, Carolyn Leavitt, that it was either today or yesterday, she said the Trump administration fully supports this Israeli bombing campaign, this genocide. Yeah.
They don't call it genocide, though. They'll call it anything but the truth. It's mass murder. They will not discuss it under the terms of reality that most of us look at life and come to terms with. Reality. These people are being destroyed and have been for how long now? 2 years? I don't know. It's disgusting. And it actually just, I get to the point where I get frustrated by these people. They're otherwise intelligent people, and yet they cannot see Trump for what he really is now, a Zionist stooge. That's all he is right now. Now, he's doing some good things, but I do believe this is the Great Reset, and I think it's well underway, and I think the plan was to keep it cookies, donuts, good things, so people can argue all day long, well, he did this, he did that. How dare you bring up this or that? You know, it's conflict, it's chaos. It's what they're doing.
Exactly, and that's what we see with the JFK files just being released. That's another bit of crumbs thrown to the plebes. You know.
What's your take on that? Obviously, the truth didn't come out. No one with a brain thought it would. It's just more diversion. I don't know how much was redacted. I didn't pay attention to it because the initial reports were, they're not saying who did it and why.
There are some mentions of Israel in there, which I've seen people make much hay out of, but this is stuff that's been in the public domain for decades. I mean, I remember when you interviewed Michael Collins Piper years ago, and we're all familiar with his book, Final Judgment, which came out in the first edition in 1994, and he had access to all this information back then. So it's not like groundbreaking new information. It's just that people don't pay attention to what's in the public domain. So a lot of people are getting charged up, and even in the alternative media, they're getting pretty charged up about some pretty vague references to Israel that have been released in this last document tranche. And none of it's new. none of it's new. I wrote an article last year about JFK, the assassination of JFK, RFK, and 9/11, comparing the three events and showing the hand behind all of them. And if I had access to this information then, if Michael Collins Piper had access to it 30 years ago, then, you know, it's not new.
No, it's not. And too bad he's not still with us to be able to contribute as he did. He put the truth right out there. Here's another one for you. Now, this is very interesting. Colonel McGregor, right, says the quiet part of this whole nightmare out loud. Trump, contribute as he did. He put the truth right out there. Here's another one for you. Now, this is very interesting. Colonel McGregor, right, says the quiet part of this whole nightmare out loud. Trump, the White House is now occupied Jewish territory. Those are facts, and that's Colonel McGregor.
Yeah, the evidence is now in the mainstream, and it's good to see him not talking in euphemisms. I remember for a while Colonel McGregor would talk about neocons, and he would say neoconservatives.
Well, he wouldn't come on this program, and the booker for his appearances, they knew exactly what we were doing here, and they felt it was too risky for him two years ago.
That's unfortunate. It is unfortunate, but I think he's come a long way because a lot of this talk about neoconservatives, I think it was Colonel McGregor who said the neoconservatives run Wall Street or run Hollywood, and I remember hearing him say that, and I said, what are you talking about, the neoconservatives? You know, it's right. The Jews, man. You know, say J-E-W, if it's easy enough to say.
Well, you know, if they were Catholics, we'd be saying Catholics or Protestants. This double standard of being afraid to say the word Jew is crazy. It always has been.
Yeah.
It's intellectually dishonest. It's also cowardly. You just won't, you won't speak the truth. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, it certainly is. And, you know, you follow the truth wherever it leads, you know, no matter how uncomfortable it might make people.
If you're an honorable person, that's exactly what you do. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we're at a crucial nodal point in our history, though, because this conversation is making its way into the mainstream. I saw Candace Owens last night, and she's on YouTube. She has, you know, she gets millions of viewers and whatnot, and she was formerly at Ben Shapiro's outfit there, the Daily Wire, which is, I'm happy to say, it seems like it's crumbling before our eyes. And she did a show on Israel's involvement in the JFK assassination based on the documents that were released. And, you know, I watched it, and I'm sitting there thinking, this is kind of surreal. I never thought I'd be seeing a sort of mainstream, you know, quasi-mainstream production talking about Israel's role in the JFK assassination. So this conversation is definitely going mainstream, and it's a great time to be alive.
It is. I just don't know how much and how hard they're going to be able to successfully intimidate people into shutting up again. The cat is out of the bag. I don't think you're going to get the kitty back in, or the genie back in the bottle. I just don't. I think they honestly are in a position, this may sound like a cop-out, but I hope not. I think they're in a position now of such overwhelming dominance of this country, they really don't care. They own the media. They own everything, basically, or control it. And I just don't think they care. I think that's the reason we're being able to question things, talk about things. People are they're still being killed. Go back to Seth Rich, and, you know, there'd be a lot of people killed by the machine. And we know who the machine is now. But McGregor's statement was quite encouraging to me. He has come a long way. Bravo to him. He's not playing games. He's speaking his truth, which is the truth, and it's great to see.
It is. Though I think you're right. I think that this information is being allowed to spread because they don't fear anything. Their power is almost absolute. They're essentially ready to put the capstone on their infernal pyramid of control, and things that they used to censor or really go out of their way to shut up, now they're just allowing to flourish. And so it is kind of a race, the public consciousness racing with this Jewish megalomania to, you know, battle it out and to see what reaches the finish line first. It's going to be an exciting 3-4 years, Jeff. The world's going to look a lot different, I think, by the time Trump's out of office, especially as they steamroll towards this 2030 magical year of theirs. You know, this whole UN Agenda 2030 and this technocratic imposition on our lives, and that's one of the things that gives me really more concerned than anything with the Trump administration, other than his pathetic fealty to Zion, is the AI technocratic accelerationists that have lined up behind him and what their plans are for this country. And that's another thing that MAGA just seems to support now. I remember there used to be opposition to this AI control network, this control grid that these people are trying to put online. And now MAGA right-wing so-called Christians support it. And it's like, these people that are pushing this, that are promulgating this AI takeover, they are not Christians. Their values are not in line with ours. These people are atheists. They kneel before the great God of technology and science and humanism. And these people are not in line with the values of middle Americans. And so it blows my mind that they've been able to so successfully co-opt the minds and the support of middle America, because these people are not, they do not represent us. They don't represent our values. They are not like us. And their plans for this country are very diabolical.
I agree very, very much so. Here's a story for you. The most damaging, it is commonly said, the most damaging spy ever to be arrested in this country was Jonathan Pollard, the Jewish American who did so much damage. A lot of people were killed because of his revelations. I think most of you listening know who Jonathan Pollard is, P-O-L-L-A-R-D. He's in Israel now, living a good life. But the guy is brilliant, first of all. He is not tolerating the October 7th attack as anything less than an inside job, which it was. We know that now. And of the 1,200 Jews supposedly killed on that day, the IDF, or the Israeli military, killed probably half of those. Now, I lament all deaths equally. I don't care. Death is not cool. But when you got only 500 or 600 dead instead of whatever they claim, I don't know what the total number is, the official number, you got a problem. Now, Jonathan Pollard is a very interesting man. Here's what he's saying about the October 7th attack through the impregnable wall into Israel. Take a listen to this. He is now, by the way, being threatened to be arrested in Israel and put on trial because of what he's saying. Now, how do you attribute honor and character to a spy like this? Well, in this case, you kind of have to. He's speaking against his own government, his own country. He's telling the truth. Take a listen.
The actual reasons why this happened on Simchat Torah, why it was that it took 6 hours for any reaction to occur, when the Army and Air Force bases were within earshot of what was going on. I have friends who were helicopter pilots, attack pilots, who were sitting in their cockpits ready to take off. Fully.
All right, he's talking about IDF helicopter, Apache helicopters, sitting in their cockpits, ready to take off when this thing happened, okay? Inside job. Here's Jonathan Pollard again.
Ready to stop them at the fence. They didn't get their orders for 6 hours. The Army had to...
He said they were ready to stop them at the fence. In other words, the invading Palestinians, Hamas, were going to be stopped at the fence. They knew exactly, of course they knew, the Jewish military, the government, they knew exactly what was going on. But the helicopter pilots were never given the go-ahead to stop them.
Spread out in all the communities in what we call the Gaza envelope. And, okay, well, they decided that it wasn't necessary because no one was coming across. No one could get by the fence. So they did away with the Army protection, and they kind of appointed the local civilian security detachments. Then they took a lot of their guns away, and they said, you go buy your own bloody gun if you want. Why? The most commonly heard word right now in Israel is lama. Why? Why would you do that?
In other words, why would you take the guns away from your own people, which the Israeli government did, and said, buy your own. At one point, they were arming their own populace, but they didn't do that.
What was the explanation for that? I can't fathom it. I can't understand it. I can't wrap my head around it. Why? You're on an active frontier. It's a combat zone. Why are you taking military equipment away from the people who you've, by default, allowed or designated as the first responders? You know, on a lot of cases, the security detachments who survived and have given evidence, they were totally outgunned. How am I supposed to defend a community with this when they're coming across with Kalashnikovs and RPGs and RKPs and all kinds of heavy infantry equipment? How am I supposed to shoot them with a 9mm pistol? Our guys did. They did. In some cases, they took the guns off the dead Hamasniks. That's how bad it is here. They had to strip the enemy of their equipment to use against them. Who's responsible for that? Lama, why? It's now been pretty well confirmed that we got a warning of war from the Egyptians 3 days before the war started. So the question is, who received this warning? Mossad? Army intelligence? Amman? Foreign ministry? Somebody in the PMOs, in the prime minister's office? Who? Who was the recipient of this warning? And what happened to it? Because that's another guy that needs to go up against a wall. So they hacked our communications. Did they? I don't know. They could have. But what I do know is that physically they destroyed enough both to overcome the barrier and, get ready for this, alert people a couple kilometers away that they're coming across the border. They could hear it. They could see it. You don't need a sensor when you got two Mark I eyeballs. You could see them. There were phone calls, I've heard them, from soldiers saying, it's war. It's war. They're coming across in force. Send help now. Nothing.
All right, that's Jonathan Pollard, the most damaging spy ever in the U.S., back in Israel, blowing the whistle on the October 7th hoax. And it was known by the government. Something was coming. The Egyptians even gave them that three-day in advance warning. Nothing was done. They know everything. They wanted this as a pretense to try to annihilate everybody in Gaza. And they've run into some obstacles. They haven't been successful yet. Trump, of course, what, 5-6 weeks ago said, I'm going in and we're going to go, I'm going to get rid of everyone in Gaza and we're going to build the Riviera of the Middle East there. And last week he said, well, what are you talking about? No one can force those people to leave. No one's going to force the people in Gaza to leave. It's not going to happen. 180 degrees, the opposite of what he said. No one noticed. The ever-Trumpers said, nope, it's okay with me if he lies. It's fine. I don't care. This whole thing is crazy. Wyatt, go ahead, please.
No, it is. And you're right, Jonathan Pollard's an interesting individual. You know, I like what he said right there, and he's especially brazen in doing so because Israel just passed a law that makes October 7th denial illegal, and I think it's punishable by up to 5 years in prison in Israel.
He's facing arrest. So, he is.
Yeah.
In his own
country. Yeah, well, it wouldn't be the first time. Yeah. If you recall, too, he served 30 years of a life sentence in America, and when he got out, he took Sheldon Adelson's private jet. Sheldon Adelson at the time was Donald Trump's biggest financier, his biggest benefactor. He took Sheldon Adelson's private jet, and when he landed on the tarmac in Israel, he was greeted by Benjamin Netanyahu on the tarmac. And the two of them bumped elbows because it was during COVID. They couldn't shake hands, and Benjamin Netanyahu said, welcome home. There was a big photo op taken. But more interestingly, too, about him, the Times of Israel reported, I think it was like 2014 thereabouts, that Netanyahu attempted to blackmail Bill Clinton into releasing Pollard, and he used tape recordings that he had of Clinton's steamy phone conversations with Monica Lewinsky. He tried essentially extorting him, blackmailing him to release Jonathan Pollard. That was reported in the Israeli press about 10 years ago. So he's an interesting figure, but, you know, in this case, he's not wrong. You know, I remember there was a New York Times article that came out shortly after October 7th that spoke about, or, you know, it mentioned Israel's knowledge of Hamas's plan to attack, and it mentioned that they, you know, they were in possession of a 40-page battle plan document. It was codenamed something like Jericho Wall, and it was said to uncannily mirror what actually transpired on October 7th. And this was reported in the Times of Israel as well, and in the Associated Press. Like, it was pretty well known that the Israeli Defense Forces knew what was going to happen. They, you know, there was, I think the Times of Israel report came out maybe a week or two after the October 7th attack, and it said that for months prior to the attack, IDF soldiers repeatedly tried to pass information about training, digging, mapping, all this other stuff up the chain of command that was going on in that particular area, but nothing came of it. So, you know, let's not kid ourselves and think that they were just caught with their pants down like we were on 9/11. That's total bullshit. And Yoav Gallant, the former Israeli defense minister, has come out and spoke openly about Hannibal Directive being, that they invoked the Hannibal Directive, which means just kill indiscriminately, kill your own people so they're not taken as hostages. So the fact that the media still reports that 1,200 people are killed by Hamas militants is just disingenuous. It's just not true.
Okay. Sorry. Let me plug this in again. All right. Now,
that's better.
What I did was play 8 or 9, I think at least 6 videos of Mossad. I'm going to say they're Mossad because most frontline IDF are certainly accountable to a Mossad of some kind. These people, active duty soldiers, working on the wall that separates Israel from Gaza, working 24/7. It's manned all the time. It's one of the most impregnable defenses in the world, by the way. And I had at least 6 videos of active duty soldiers now or retired military who were working on the wall to make sure that no Palestinians were able to attack Israel from Gaza. And they said, every single one of them, there's no way, no way in hell that this government did not know what was coming. There's no possibility. I worked there. They said, a fly can't move without us noticing on that wall. So anyway, and then they talked about advance notice. They talked about the Egyptian warning. They made it very clear that there is no way that that could have been a spontaneous event at all. It had to be an inside job. These are again, active duty or retired IDF or whatever branch they were in, working the wall. So I'm sure you saw some of those. They went away real quick. They'd get released. I'd play them and they'd be gone in a day or two. The Israeli government didn't want that out there. But it was out there, and I did play it, and there's no question in my mind that Pollard is 100% correct.
Yeah, he absolutely is. You know, it should be noted, too, that I think the day before the attack, IDF military commanders discussed a possible threat to the Nova Music Festival, and the Nova Music Festival was the one that was overrun by Hamas militants. And these IDF military commanders, hours before the attack, tried blowing the whistle that they suspected something was going to come. They had intelligence that there was going to be a significant threat, and nothing happened. And the event, the Nova Music Festival, was actually moved to that location like a day or two before, which I always thought was pretty odd. The organizers, they abruptly switched the location after they said the first one just didn't work out. And I'm like, okay, well, that's kind of strange. But, I mean, let's face it. The intelligence security apparatus of the Israeli state is known worldwide as being a world leader in those avenues. There's no way that Hamas militants armed with, you know, rudimentary Soviet-era technology, firearms and whatnot, could have just...
Hang gliders.
Hang gliders and rubber dinghies and trucks and whatever else, that they were able to orchestrate this attack and remain unmolested for 8 hours or something like that. I mean, clearly this was a classic problem-reaction-solution because this was going to be the event to stimulate the public emotion to then swoop in and do everything that they plan to do anyway in the Middle East. And that's what we're seeing now. Like, you know, October 7th happens,
absolutely.
And then before you know it, they're in southern Lebanon. And then before you know it, Syria falls. And then before you know it, we're bombing Yemen. And then before you know it, we're threatening Iran. And so they get you playing ball with this big, dramatic, you know, media-orchestrated blitz, and then you get so wrapped up in this thing, you don't even remember that the whole thing was based on a pack of lies. It's just like 2003 all over again, 2001 to 2003.
I agree. I totally agree. I just don't see how people don't at some point begin to question things on their own. But after watching for 30, 40 years now, the nonstop mental programming of Americans, the mind control, the brainwashing, the repetition. Remember, it's all repetition. After 8 or 9 times of something being repeated, most people will accept it as real. It's that simple. It's crazy. If it's done in a straight-faced, official format, whether it's on the MSM or a government release, it doesn't matter. They all add up, and repetition is the key. But people just don't question. Why? Most of them are having trouble. They're under terrible financial stress. They're now Gen Z. Gen Z is up to, I think, 28, 29 years of age now, down to about 14. That's Gen Z. They're forming a very large percent of the active part of American culture. And they don't have it. They just don't have it. They don't have it anymore. They're just losers. Many of them are okay. Most of them are not going anywhere at the speed of light. Nothing happening. Nobody home. And when you look at that phone screen 5 hours a day, what kind of a chance do you think you have to make a determination on what is real and what isn't? You don't. Anyway, go ahead.
No, you're right. And you're right about the repetition, too. And I see that backing up to what I said about Yoav Gallant admitting that they invoked the Hannibal Directive and killed their own people, yet the media still pumps out the narrative that 1,200 people were killed by Hamas. And so that becomes official history. It's the same thing with the Holocaust, the 6 million, that Kabbalistic figure, the sacred 6 million.
No finer example than that. You got it. Yeah. By the way, they were using the 6 million figure after World War One. There's another
new. Even before that, yes. in the late 19th century, all the way up until World War II, is documented the sacred 6 million figure being worked into news reports and different reporting. So it has become this totem, the sacred totem, which bears no semblance to reality. And, you know, but you repeat it enough, like you said, and it doesn't matter what the reality is. It doesn't matter what the facts and figures say, because this media blitz, this narrative, becomes, it impresses upon the public mind, that becomes their reality. So Auschwitz, for instance, used to have those famous stone tablets outside, and they proclaimed that 4
million... Weren't they bronze plaques? Maybe they were stone tablets.
I think you're right.
I think you're probably right.
But they spoke about the 4 million that were killed by the Nazi barbarians.
Through these gates, 4 million Jews passed, never to walk the other way, through something like that. I don't know, arched, work will set you free, that arched entry gate. It was all crap. Tell the story, though. It started out saying 4 million.
4 million. And then after the Zundel trials, I think that lost all credibility. So they had to revise it down to 1.1 million. But the sacred 6 million doesn't change. And if you even so much as revise it, even if you try and revise it in conformance with the changes they made, say you were trying to revise it by 3 million like they did on the tablets, you'd go to jail in like 16 countries around the world. So, you know, and they're doing very much the same thing with October 7th with this legislation they've passed in Israel that renders you liable for 5 years in prison, like Jonathan Pollard is facing right now, I'm sure, for, quote, denying October 7th. So anytime history comes at you enforced by law, you can be fairly certain that what you're being told is a lie, a crock of shit.
Do you know that 4 million, that I've got another version, it's the same story. That plaque first said 4 million. And then because I believe it was Ernst Zundel, his trials, they had to make it 3 million. And then more pressure, more investigation, they had to say 2 million. And now it says approximately 1 million passed through these gates, never to walk the other way out to freedom. So they've gone from 4 to 1, approximately 1. That's 3 million, but yet 3 from 6 still equals 6. It's right there in the plaque.
That's Jewish math, Jeff.
Yeah, it is true. It's true.
Yeah, I know. And that's the thing about the Holocaust. It gets smaller and smaller when you actually start looking into it. And that's one of those really emotionally charged... See, what they're very good at is building up these emotionally charged edifices. And they sell it to you through their mediums of Hollywood and the media and all, you know, everything else they own, academia. So that
what power center, what matrix point don't they control or own? That's the question.
Right.
That's not an exaggeration either.
And that's how they're able to foist upon us these preposterous narratives. especially as it pertains to World War II, but October 7th is equally as ludicrous. 9/11 is equally as ludicrous. And that's a domino that I'm happy to see fall or begin to fall, even in the mainstream now. I think a lot more people are starting to reexamine what happened on September 11th. But the problem is we need that sort of vigilance at the time when it happens, because here we are.
Whoop. Talk to me, Todd. Did we lose Wyatt? I don't hear anything now. All right. I'm going to assume that that Wyatt has been cut off. All right. We're trying to get him back. Okay. I'm going to play a little bit more of Jonathan Pollard. This is a big story. I'm going to put that in the headlines tonight, too. Here's Jonathan Pollard again, calling out his own country, his own government, about the obvious inside job on October 7th when Hamas allegedly broke through the wall and invaded Israel.
Nothing. Those weren't hacked. That communication wasn't hacked.
And you mentioned your friend was a helicopter pilot and he was sitting there listening to this.
Yeah,
for hours.
The whole squadron was.
So I'm just, the reason why I'm asking these questions is because there's been quite a lot of talk from people that appear to be on our side from the ground.
All right, are you back, Wyatt?
Hey, Jeff, yep.
Good. All right, I think they cut you off there. They didn't like the conversation. It's
now that
this is factual stuff. We're not making any of this up. I've been saying this for many, many years, so I'm sure Wyatt's been writing about it and speaking about it as well, and many others. It's time that the lies be addressed head on. It really is. Or we should just give up and snap on the leg irons and start learning how to speak Yiddish. I don't know what else to do. It's crazy. But the amount of control, the massive control over Western society is virtually immeasurable now. And when you think about this little group of people, was it 13, 14 million in the world? I don't know, 15 million? That's it. It's 0.02% of the world population. Go ahead.
Yeah, and they've been able to capture our country. They were able to capture Russia in the early 20th century. I mean, it's incredible what they're able to do with numerically such small numbers.
Look what they did to Russia. You're right. They captured an entire major European nation, taught it, basically, to absorb and adopt what we call it Soviet Bolshevism now, terrible communism, killed 50 million people or something like that, got involved with World War II, and they were just about to roll through Europe and take, honestly, they were going to take most of Europe to the English Channel. That's why Germany had to attack in Operation Barbarossa. I think most of you know that by now. It's true. Russians, Soviets, the communist Bolsheviks had well over a million men, fully armed, tanks, everything, ready to go and roll right to the English Channel. Germany stopped them. That's a fact. Hitler, like him or not, saved Europe at least for 4 years. And then they lost part of it when Eastern Europe fell to the communist hordes.
Yeah. And it was entirely a Jewish operation. Like, the Bolshevik movement was Jewish. And that doesn't mean every single Bolshevik to a man was Jewish, but without the Jewish element in Bolshevism, that was its spiritual motor, it never would have existed. And people understood this. Winston Churchill wrote about this in that famous Illustrated Sunday Herald article in 1920, February 8th, 1920, Zionism versus Bolshevism, the struggle for the soul of the Jewish people. So there's no doubt about that. And Hitler was a reaction to that. You know, a lot of people view Hitler in a vacuum, like he came to power and, you know, this, that, and the other. They disregard the conditions of Weimar Germany and the conditions of Soviet Russia at the time and what was going on in Bavaria and the Soviet republics that were being set up by people like Rosa Luxemburg and Kurt Eisner and Karl Liebknecht and these people that had taken over or trying to take over Germany. So, fascism was a reaction to Bolshevism. They were trying to create an equal counterforce that could match the intensity and the vigor of the communist opponents. And when look at Spain, Franco's Spain was Catholic Spain. And when the Abraham Lincoln Brigade starts, or the International Brigade starts sweeping over it and burning churches and raping nuns, we didn't send anyone to bail out Spain. Hitler did. Hitler sent people to bail out Spain, Catholic Spain, and I think it's time we stop heaping scorn and abuse on the man that did these sorts of things.
Well, it's not us doing it. We're just now basically being programmed to accept it. But no, we can't. We have to think. All right. Thank you, Wyatt. Excellent, as always. It's a really good thing to see these subjects being discussed by more and more people. They're waking up. That's very encouraging. And you're playing a really serious role in this, so keep it up.
Well, thanks a lot, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
All right, my friend. Take care. Wyatt Peterson. And we will take a break and come right back. Hang on.